There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warmer from the glow. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. Joining me in segment number two, going to be Matt Joseph. You know him better as Mid-Major Matt. Does tremendous work over at FTN Network. Does a tremendous job out there in the city of Richmond, Virginia with his show Border to Border. We're going to be chatting with him about what he's made out of the first week plus of the MLB season, the way that he's taking a look at all these overs that we have been getting, the player props that he is going to be taking a look at for Monday, and just some of the things that have been standing out to him in terms of the player prop market here to begin the season. In the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at @JuniorNerdSquirty1. Keep in mind, learns DM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter/X questions today, but we had ourselves a tremendous day of baseball on Sunday. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
The hottest team in baseball right now to the over is the Miami Marlins. They are the coldest team record-wise, but hey, they will not lose them all this season. They take down the St. Louis Cardinals by kind of 10-3. This was not a good start, to say the least, from Kyle Gibson, as he surrendered 7 runs over the course of 6 innings, including a pair of home runs. Going deep for Miami, Nick Flash Gordon, second home run of the season. Jazz Chisholm, his second of the year as well. Max Meyer, good start here. 1 solo home run allowed over the course of 6 innings as Nolan Gorman. He goes deep twice in this game, once off of Meyer, his first home run of the season. Then Matt Andrees gives one up for his second. Andrees gives up 2 runs in his inning of work, but you had George Soriano and Rinaldi both supply a scoreless inning. And for St. Louis, you did have the duel of John King along with Mr. Ryan Fernandez give up a combined 3 runs to over to earn over the course of their 3 innings of work. So not such a savory start for the St. Louis Cardinals out there, and that's a rough loss for them. This has been a horrible start for the Chicago White Sox as well. They are now 1-8 straight up as they fall to the Kansas City Royals by a count of 5-3, and Garrett Crochet does his part, gives up 2 runs over the course of 5 innings, and then the schlubs in the bullpen completely let him down. Going to be noticing that a lot this year. Dom Leone, he gives you 1 2/3 inning scoreless, but Davey Garcia, 3 runs, 2 of which were earned, including a home run. Going deep for the Kansas City Royals, he had Hunter Renfro go deep off of Crochet, first home run of the season, and MJ Melendez, 3rd home run of the series, and third of the campaign. That comes off of Garcia. Steve Olson also provided a scoreless inning for the Chicago White Sox. 12 men stranded on base in this one, as for the Kansas City Royals, Alec Marsh not long for this game, gives up 3 runs over the course of 4 2/3 innings, but could have been a whole heck of a lot worse. And then James McArthur, John Schreiber, Will Smith, they all supply scoreless inning, and Anel Zedepa was able to give you 1 1/3 inning scoreless. So the White Sox misery, it continues. Dilly dilly, and the pit of misery continues if you're fading the Oakland A's. They have now covered 6 out of their last 7 run lines, and second straight up win for them in 2 days. They take down the Detroit Tigers by a count of 7-1, as they do a nice job getting to Captain Jack Flaherty, who gave up 6 runs in 6 innings, including a home run. Going deep, Zach Galof, home run number 1 of the campaign. From there, Alex Vaedo, 2 scoreless innings. Alex Lang gives up a run in an inning, but part of the issue you might have with the Tigers moving forward, their offense. Riley Green got a solo home run off of Kyle Mueller, his 3rd home run of the season, but that's had nothing to him for the offense. Joe Boyle, oh, Boyle rules. 5 scoreless innings. Lucas Erzedge gives you a pair of outs out of the bullpen. Michael Kelly, scoreless inning, and then Mueller, he gives up that solo home run over the course of 2 1/3 innings to be able to get the job done. The New York Mets have been not so great with their lineup. 3 runs or fewer scored in all but 2 of their games this far this season, but was enough to take down the Cincinnati Reds. 3-1 the final. Andrew Abbott does give up 3 runs, 2 of which were earned over the course of his 5 innings, including home run going deep for the Mets. Francisco Lindor, who's been terrible this season, he gets his first of the campaign, and Sean Manea, he has not been terrible, gives up 1 run over the course of 5 innings, but from there, Orde Lopez, Edwin Diaz, Adam Ottavino, Brooks Raley, they all supply a scoreless inning. And then for the Cincinnati Reds, you had 3 scoreless innings out of Brent Suter. Some good long relief. TJ Antone, he had to leave after throwing just 1 pitch, and Buck Farmer, he was able to supply a scoreless inning as well. As it's been the Mets and Reds who have been very good under teams to begin the season. 6 unders to 3 overs for the Mets as far this season. And for the Houston Astros, right now they are your top under team in all baseball. And our DK Network right a pick of the under in Astros versus Rangers. That is 3-1. The Houston Astros are able to get the job done. This was their worst start since 2011, by the way, the 2-7 start, but they get Yordan Alvarez to supply a 3-run homer. That was the difference in this game, as he had 6 total hits. That comes off of Dane Dunning, who Dane Dunning had allowed. That was the first hit that he allowed. He allowed 4 total hits, 3 runs over the course of 6 2/3 innings. From there, Jordan Latz, Yuri Rodriguez both provide a scoreless inning, and then you got an out of the bullpen scoreless as well out of Grant Anderson. But for the Rangers, absolutely nothing doing in this one. Their lone run actually comes off of Josh Hader. Hader has not been great to start the year, giving up a run and an inning, but Ronald Blanco, coming off of his no-hitter, a 1-hit performance, going 6 innings in this one, did walk 4, but Rafael Montero, Ryan Presley, they both supply a scoreless inning, so nice win there for the Houston Astros, and nice domination from the Boston Red Sox on Sunday. They take down the LA Angels by a count of 12-2, as for Boston, they were able to have a nice home run derby here. Reese McGuire, his 2nd home run of the season. Rafael Devers, 2nd home run of the season. Tyler O'Neill's 5th home run of the season. And then how about a home run number 1 of the season for David Hamilton, as that was more than enough support for Tanner Houck. 6 scoreless innings out of him. Chase Anderson in long relief, he gives up 2 runs in 3 innings, including a home run to Mike Trout, 4th home run season. But for Chase Ilfeseth, wasn't the world's worst start. It wasn't amazing. He did give up 3 out of those 4 home runs, but also shots given up in the course of 5 innings. He gave up 3 runs. From there, Jose Cicerno gives up 3 runs, and he got 1 out. Jose Suarez, I don't know why they're still experimenting with him. 5 runs surrendered in 3 1/3 innings. Miguel Sano, position player, had to get an out of the bullpen. And Guillermo Zungia, he gives up a run, and he couldn't get a single out. So that was not great, to say the least, for the LA Angels. And this was very solid if you took the San Francisco Giants. 3-2, they get a 1-run win over the San Diego Padres. For Matt Waldron, not a bad start here. 1 earned run surrendered in 5 1/3 innings. And Ha-Sung Kim, who's pretty sure-handed out there in the field, pair of errors in this one, and all 3 runs given up by the Padres on earned runs, as the error that he had on Johnny Brito that costed him the game, he gives up 2 unearned runs, Brito does, in 2/3 of an inning. You did have Yuki Matsui along with Stephen Kolick be able to supply a combined 2 scoreless innings, but for the San Diego Padres, they just weren't able to get a lot generated off of Logan Webb in terms of runs. They got a lot of hits, 10 hits in total, but just 2 runs to show for it. Ryan Walker, Camilo Duval, they close the door, scoreless 8th and 9th innings, as the Padres go just 2 of 11 with men in scoring position, and a strangely low-scoring game out there in Colorado, as well as the Rockies. They fall by 1 run at home to the Tampa Bay Rays, this by a count of 3-2, as for the Tampa Bay Rays, you did not get any home runs in this one, but they had timely hitting, 3 of 8 with men in scoring position, and Ryan Pepiot was dealing 11 strikeouts in 6 scoreless innings from there, Garrett Clevenger. Pair of outs out of the bullpen, you did have Phil Maton give up a run in his inning, and Sean Armstrong comes in for 2 innings. He does give up a run along the way, but for Colorado, Dakota Hudson, 3 runs surrendered in 6 innings. Victor Vodnik, 2 scoreless innings. Tyler Kinley, scoreless inning. Not enough, though, as the Colorado Rockies just unable to put back the ball in this one, so strange under out there at Coors Field, and this was a strange game as well, as the Cubs, they take down the LA Dodgers by a count of 8-1. This game involved a nearly 2.5-hour rain delay, so if you were taking a look at anything live, that was very interesting to say the least, but for, hopefully I get the name correct, as I think I'm going to be saying it wrong all season long, Shota Imanaga, he only goes 4 innings due to the rain, but was able to go 4 scoreless innings. He did have a very nice long relief appearance, 3 innings of 1 run supplied by Daniel Valencia, Mark Leiter Jr., Yancy Almonte. They both provide a scoreless inning, and Cody Bellinger supplies a boom. Second home run season, that comes off of Ryan Yarbrough as Gavin Stone. He got lifted before the rain delay. He gives up 5 runs, not only one of which was earned. He was hurt by a pair of errors out there in the field by Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, but did not look ready for the spot. Ryan Yarbrough, very good in long relief. 1 run allowed, that's a home run, in 4 2/3 innings. And Gus Varland does allow 2 runs, one of which was earned in his third of an inning. But the Chicago Cubs, they're able to wrap up that series with the LA Dodgers by taking a pair. And you saw also being able to take a game on Sunday, the New York Yankees. They take down the Toronto Blue Jays by a count of 8-3. As for the Blue Jays, 3 runs or fewer scored by them in 7 out of their last 9 games. For the Jays, they strain 11 men on base. Just a rough start to the season in general for this lineup. And Yankees have been very much an under team to begin the season. 6 unders, 3 overs, and a push. You'd add for the New York Yankees a relatively solid start here from one Mr. Luis Eel, but not one of a lot of length. 8 strikeouts and 4 out of 3rd innings. 4 walks as well. He is very, very wild to say the least, but he's backed up by a good bullpen. And Stannis Santana, Caleb Ferguson, they supply a combined 3 scoreless innings. Nick Birdie gave you a pair of outs out of the bullpen, and Jake Covenson's does allow an unearned run in his inning of work. There were a pair of errors out there in the field, but Giancarlo Stanton, how about him being able to provide a grand slam off of Bowden Francis? 3rd home run season, and for Bowden Francis, he got chased in this game after 3 innings, allows 5 runs, including that grand slam. Paul Espino holds down the 4-2 scoreless innings, and Trevor Richards give you a scoreless inning as well, but Tim Mesa gives up a run in 2/3 of an inning, and Genesis Cabrera, 2 runs surrendered, he went 1 3rd innings himself. The Washington Nationals are able to wrap up their series with the Philadelphia Phillies with a W, 3-2, they're able to get the job done. As for Christopher Sanchez, this was not the start that he was looking for, 3 runs given up in 4 1/3 innings. From there, the bullpen was not bad. Sir Anthony Dominguez, Matt Strom, both to provide a scoreless inning, and Junior Marte, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless, but it was Umando Soso who provided mostly offense for the Philadelphia Phillies. First home run season, that comes off of Mackenzie Gore, who did not get gored, giving up 2 runs over the course of 5 2/3 innings. Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, they both supply a scoreless inning, and Jordan Weems was able to go for 4 outs out of the bullpen scoreless to be able to get the job done for the Washington Nationals. And the Pirates, they're able to win multiple games in their series against the Baltimore Orioles, and they're now 8-2. 3-2, the final for the old Pittsburgh Pirates, no longer the Poopy Pirates. As for Baltimore, Dean Kramer, actually a really good start. And by the way, the Pirates and the Boston Red Sox, your top run line teams right now in all baseball, they are 8-2 on the run line, whether they're getting or laying a run and a half. Meanwhile, the Miami Marlins at 1-9, they are by far your worst team, but that said, for the Orioles, they upchuck this game with Yennier Cano coming in the 9th inning and allowing 2 runs, one of which was earned. He was hurt by a Gunnar Henderson throwing error, but Keegan Aiken prior to that, he was able to hold it down for a scoreless inning. But for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they did a good job of bending but not breaking in this game with their pitching, as you had Ronsi Contreras, Jose Hernandez provide a combined 3 scoreless inning, and Marcos Gonzalez, he gives up 2 runs over the course of 6 innings, but it was just enough for the Pittsburgh Pirates to be able to get the job done in this one. For the Atlanta Braves, they get the job done against the Arizona Diamondbacks. 5-2 the final. So the Braves sweep this series despite the fact that they trailed for most of it. This was the one actual comfortable win that they were able to get, as they do get to Ryan Nelson in this one. Nelson gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 innings, including a pair of home runs going deep for Atlanta. Matt Olson, 3rd home run of the campaign, and then Michael Harris, the 2nd, gets a 2nd, and Austin Riley goes deep off of Miguel Castro for his 2nd home run season. Castro allows 2 runs in total over the course of 1 1/3 innings. The other Nelson, Kyle Nelson, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless, but for Arizona, not a lot doing at the plate. As for Chris Sale, he was giving a sale on strikeouts. 6 punchouts in 5 1/3 innings, did allow 2 runs, but Joey Menez, 5 outs out of the bullpen, scoreless. Tyler Mazek, Piers Johnson, both able to supply a scoreless inning. The Milwaukee Brewers were able to have a nice explosion on Sunday as well. 12-4, they get to Emerson Hancock and the Seattle Mariners, and they get it done. As for Hancock, man, 8 runs surrendered in 3 1/3 innings. Cashy over on his strikeout prop was 6, but gave up a pair of home runs along the way as he had William Contreras go deep off of him for his first home run season. Then he goes deep off of Josh Rojas, position player, for his second. And William Adames also went deep off of Hancock, second home run season for Colin Ray. He said, hip hip hooray to a good start. 1 run earned, 2 runs in total surrendered in 6 innings. And then from there, Taigo Vieira, he comes in, provides 3 innings, gives up 2 runs along the way, and he did allow a home run going deep for Seattle. Dom Canzone, second home run season, but for the Seattle Mariners, they had to use Mr. Rojas, who I mentioned before, position player. He gave up 2 runs over the course of an inning. Trent Thornton, scoreless inning of his own. Taylor Cicado held down the fort, 2 2/3 inning scoreless, but Colin Snyder did not get a single out. He allowed 2 runs along the way himself. And then we did get a rainout involving the Twins and Guardians. So if you're looking at the trends of Major League Baseball, so it's been very much an overwhelming season. But the unders over the weekend, they were able to take a little bit more charge. And on Sunday, we did get more unders than overs. One of the few times we've been able to say that this year. 8 unders, 5 overs, and a push along the way. Favorites doing solid on the money line. Not great, not terrible. 59.3%, 83-57 is the money line record for the favorites. And road teams, 76-66 straight up this season. That has been a story. Meanwhile, the over still at about 54.8%, 74 overs to 61 unders as far this season. So that's what we're seeing in Major League Baseball right now, and that's what we all got on Sunday. Now let's take a look at some of Monday's games and just how Matt Joseph, better known as Mid-Major Matt, is currently playing the player prop market. That is up next right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Craig Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family podcast. And it is always great to be joined by this man as Matt Josephs. He does a tremendous job taking a look at this great game of baseball that we all know and love. I know that he is very hard at work taking a look at all these player props, getting set for what is going to be a nice long grind, but a fun one for this baseball season. You're able to follow him on Twitter /X at mid-major Matt altogether. And Matt, always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yes, always glad to be here. Yes, the hamster wheel that is the sports world continues to turn.
Absolutely. As Matt does great work over at FTN Network, you're able to catch his ESPN radio show Border to Border out there in Richmond, Virginia as well. Does so much great work on that front. And Matt, just what have you made out of the first week plus of the MLB season? As first week plus have just felt very overwhelming, though, for those who were looking over the weekend, did feel like the unders were finally starting to come through a little bit more.
It's funny because as a guy who does more of the prop side and does more of the individual players and team total kind of stuff, you notice this, the baseball world in a different way. I've seen a lot more strikeouts as of late, and I think it's really interesting to see because obviously we look at the umpires, we look at the weather, you know, you got the cold games in the East Coast and everything, and it seems like in some of these games, players don't even want to be there because it's so cold and miserable and windy. We've had snow games, we've had some games with some rain and some 5-hour rain delays and everything. So it's certainly been interesting to kind of track some of these first weeks and how some of the results are somewhat false because of the poor weather and the poor situation some of these teams are playing in.
Yep, it certainly is interesting to dive in on that front. And when it comes to those colder games, when it comes to just those bad conditions in general, do you think that favors the pitchers a little bit more or the hitters? Because typically I lean a little bit more towards the pitchers, but that hasn't seemed to be the case thus far this season.
Yeah, I would lean more towards the pitchers, you know, especially when the wind's blowing in and things like that. I mean, you watch some of these games, it's funny because I'm watching some of these Phillies games that are being played in the cold, and I see Bryce Harper with a mask on, and I see these guys, they're like bundled up. They might as well be wearing scarves. And it's just so funny to see that because if you're so bundled up, how are you ready to swing and everything? And how are you ready to field the ball perfectly? You know, Bryce Harper did that, you know, 3-home run game with his mask on. So certainly that's something the Philadelphia fans would like to see a little bit more of. But it's just so funny to see these guys play in the cold and how bundled up they are and how I can't imagine that helps swings very much. Just your general attitude of wanting to play the game.
Absolutely. And that is something very much to take note of as just been a strange start to the year in general on the weather front. As joining me on the show, we do have Matt Josephs, better known as Mid-Major Matt, joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And what have you made out of the NL East thus far? Because the Braves, very clearly that top team, but now they're going to be dealing with Spencer Strider being on the 15-day injury list, might be out even longer than that. And when it comes to the Philadelphia Phillies, I know they're very near and dear to your heart. It's been a little bit of an inconsistent year for them, and I just look at the Phillies every year, and I don't know if it's just me, but always does feel like their bullpen just gets off to a rough first month or so of the season.
I think it's poor lineup construction for the Phillies. I really do. You have too many free swingers. You have too many guys who are more than willing to strike out instead of moving guys over. Like, this is like the Yankees of old, you know, past couple of years where you just have a lot of guys who are going for home runs and they're just not going for, hey, if there's a guy on second, let me hit it to the side so that I can move him over to third. Like, the Phillies don't do that. And Castellanos has started slow and Trey Turner has started slow. I'm in the camp that I don't like Kyle Schwarber as the leadoff hitter. I think he's better as like the five-hole hitter. I would put Bryson Stott up there, but of course, Kyle Schwarber is one of their better hitters right now. And if you notice, you know, the Phillies have had a lot of strikeouts this year, and it's because they didn't make any changes. They didn't do anything in the offseason to kind of fix the roster or anything like that. And yes, of course, the team that made the World Series 2 years ago and maybe should have made the World Series last year if they didn't choke against Arizona. But like, still, that doesn't mean you can't sit there and be like, hey, let's make some changes. Let's, you know, add another outfielder. Let's add another infielder, whatever. But the Phillies decided to bring back the same lineup that had poor approaches at times last year.
When it comes to the Phillies, I feel like I can say one thing with certainty. Yoan Rojas out there for his glove, not as bad. That has been very apparent here in the early part of the season, but I do think that that is going to be an interesting dynamic to take a look at. As just in general, I do think that this is a Phillies team that is going to have their ups and downs this year, and we are going to be seeing Spencer Turnbull take the bump for them on Monday, as this is a game that they're playing against the St. Louis Cardinals with Miles Michaelis on the mound. And when he's been coming in on the Phillies, they open up more around about a plus 105 or so. I'm seeing a lot of even money prices. Tulane's game is 9. How do you look at a game like Spencer Turnbull against Miles Michaelis? Because I look at both of these pitchers and this just screams over to me.
Yeah, Turnbull looked pretty good against the Reds. 7 strikeouts in 5 innings. His number was 4.5. I mean, maybe he'll probably get another 4.5 as of us doing this. His number has not come out yet. Michaelis is usually a fade for me, pretty much. But once again, like sometimes when you get too close to a team, maybe you don't necessarily have the best outlook on it. But like, there's pitchers that I feel like that Philly should hit. You know, they did pretty well against Corbin, although they probably should have had some more runs against Patrick Corbin. And this is another matchup, especially on the road, where I feel like they should put up a lot of runs against the guys like Michaelis. But I just don't know if they can or not. I don't know what the outlook's going to be. I don't know how they're going to approach the plate and things like that. He shouldn't strike out a lot of guys. But then again, you know, Patrick Corbin had a bunch of strikeouts, and the Phillies have had a lot of strikeouts already this season. Every right-handed starting pitcher has had 5 or more against them. That includes Ashcraft. That includes Frankie Montas. That includes Jake Irvin. So I don't love their approach right now. So I do agree with you that maybe the over is the side. If I trusted this lineup more, I'd probably take the Phillies in the first 5, but I just don't right now.
Yeah, with the Philadelphia Phillies, they've been an interesting bunch, to say the least, as Bryce Harper had that 3-home run game. But aside from that 3-home run game, he hasn't done much. And how much do you take a look at things like that? Because we've noticed a lot of guys this season where they have like 1 or 2 games where they just look absolutely tremendous, but another 7 to 8 games where they're really struggling. And I do think that a lot of guys' numbers early on in the season can be warped by like 1 or 2 good performances, and that just completely throws them out of the whack. And for pitchers as well on that front, just speaking in the same vein, like 1 bad start can make what is a pretty good pitcher look actually quite mediocre because they just went out there and they gave up like 8 runs in 1 start.
Well, yeah, and Aaron Nola had a really bad first start, and then he bounced back in his second start, and so Aaron Nola's numbers were ugly. And that's the thing about the early baseball years, you can't overreact to one thing, and you can't overreact to something bad you see, and then you can't go nuts on something great you see. As you just mentioned, Bryce Harper hit 3 home runs in 1 game and hasn't really done much in the other stuff. So yeah, the early numbers are rather interesting. Luis Arraez last year, I feel like, had like 30 hits in the first week of the season, and now he's just another guy. And not to mention that, he's also striking out more, which is, last year he barely struck out, and it made Miami Marlins K-prop unders like a profitable thing. And this year he's starting to strike out, and that just kind of opens up everything for the rest of the guys who are somewhat free swingers. So, you know, you kind of say, all right, maybe it's just early. Maybe he's just struggling. He'll start to pick some things up, but you can't overreact in either direction, both positive and negative.
Yep, I'm in total agreement with you there. And I think that that is so important. And when it comes to this time in the baseball season, obviously, we've got a little bit of data in terms of these data points, but when do you really make that full turn into utilizing the 2024 numbers? Because I think 10 games into the season, if we're trying to look at like batting average for 2024, not taking into account like 2023 and a little bit earlier, that'd be a disservice because some guys just get off to hot and cold starts.
Yeah, I think when it comes to especially the pitcher props and stuff like that, I feel like we're kind of starting to get an idea. Like, you know, last year the Rays were really good in the beginning of the season against left-handed starting pitchers, and then that kind of cooled off. Well, this year, and I posted this on Twitter, the Rays have had just 2 pitchers. So they've been in 10 games so far. Only 2 starting pitchers have had less than 5 strikeouts. One of them is our guy Hudson on Sunday, and that was in Coors Field, where at times you don't get a lot of strikeouts. And you saw Kikuchi in game 3 of the season, but Everybody else has had 6, 6, 6, 7, 7. And so I feel like we're starting to kind of get just a little bit of an idea. And the one thing I'll tell you that's interesting when it comes to K props and player props is it is so streaky. So while the Rays are a constant over team, they may hit a stretch where they're making contact on everything. And that's the kind of the things you notice. I have a spreadsheet put together that has all the K prop numbers on it. So it kind of visualizes what I'm looking at. The other thing I'll tell you real quick, the interesting thing, and I'll be interested to see when the market adjusts on this, the Oakland Athletics have gone under their K-props more than over their K-props because the books have set really high numbers for everything. Like on Sunday, Flaherty's number was 7.5. He had 5 strikeouts. So if you look at their average, they're pushing 6 strikeouts per game against starting pitching as an average, but yet they've gone under in 6 of 10 games. So this is all stuff you can't really pay attention to unless you visualize it in front of you. And that's why I've started doing this spreadsheet.
Yep. And I think that that is so great that you do the spreadsheet as well to be able to just keep track of a little bit of everything, because when it comes to player props, it's not like there's a big giant database and a whole bunch of sites out there being like, oh, here's the over and the under rate overall for the season for like the Tampa Bay Rays, which is information that it's not necessarily the world's easiest to find, but you're able to find it. When it comes to like a bunch of individual player props and things like that, that's much more difficult. So good on you for doing that. As Matt Joseph's, you know him better as Mid-Major Matt, he is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And I do think that this is going to be an interesting scenario as well, with Blake Snell getting his first start of the season against the Washington Nationals with Trevor Williams taking the bump. And the Giants are north of a 225 favorite. How do you gauge a guy like a Blake Snell who, I mean, he was tremendous at getting swings and misses last year, but as we know, he went unsigned for a very long time, and I think that it is fair to question what his offseason regimen was like and what sort of form we're going to get him in night number one.
You do a lot of research on these guys when it comes to Aprils and Mays, the first start of the season, first couple starts of the season for these guys, so you kind of pay attention to that sort of thing. This is where you have to do your Google searches, your Twitter searches for pitch counts and things like that. I expect that maybe Blake Snell is slightly, maybe, I don't know, 80, 85, 90, 95. Now, I haven't seen anything that says it, but I don't think we're going to get the full arsenal. Maybe 5, 5 1/3, 5 2/3. This is where you got to do a little bit of research. And it's interesting because you face the Nationals, who are one of the best teams when it comes to contact against left-handed starting pitchers. Last year, they averaged 3.67 strikeouts per game against left-handed starting pitchers. They had 6 in their game against Blake Snell last year. So far this year, Martin Perez had 6. The over-under was 2.5 for that game, so he obviously went well over that. But this is a Nationals team that makes contact. Now, it's the first long road trip of the season for them. We've also seen them at times start Joey Gallo against left-handed starting pitching, and we know Joey Gallo is a walking strikeout at times when he's not hitting homers or getting walks. So that's always something to factor here when you look at something like this, but I don't think we're going to get the full Blake Snell, although I'll say this. Last year in his very first start, he only went 4 1/3 innings against, I believe, the Rockies, but he had 9 strikeouts in that first game. So while he may not go deep, that doesn't mean he can't strike out the guys. So this will be a fascinating start. I wish almost Trevor Williams wasn't the guy starting because I don't trust Trevor Williams. If it was, well, Josiah Gray's been bad. Mackenzie Gore was good. Of course, he was facing the Phillies. If it was almost anybody else, I would almost trust the Nationals a little bit more, maybe like a first 5 sort of situation. But I can't put any sort of money on Trevor Williams, especially on the road.
Yeah, I can't blame you there with Trevor Williams. He's very much a pitch of contact guy. It's always been a little bit up and down for him. I remember he had like one good second half of the year in the Pirates with the 2018 campaign, but past that, it's been relatively rough state of affairs with him. As Mid-Major Matt, aka Matt Josephs, he is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And how much do you take a look at, shall we say, those lesser, much maligned teams? Because thus far this year, many of them have had mixed results. If you've taken the A's on the run line, honestly, it's not been going too bad for you last few days. Meanwhile, if you've been backing the Miami Marlins, well, you're in a big giant hole to begin the season. And I do think that they're some of the more interesting teams because it does feel like there's a lot of volatility with them. How do you take a look at some of those bottom feeders in the league?
I think Miami's better than their 1-9 record. Obviously, they've had so many injuries when it comes to starting pitching. And so, you know, Max Meyer pitching well for them in St. Louis was very nice for them because they've got so many injuries. I know Yuri Perez, Tommy John surgery, that was just recently announced. So I think the Marlins are going to start to turn around a little bit when they start to get more of their pitching. And then, of course, you know, Oakland. So funny because today I had something to do and one of my bets was I had Jack Flaherty's outs over And I saw a great start that Oakland had. What, they scored 6 runs, I think, in the first 3 innings. I'm like, oh, man, this was a loss. And I go in, and I'm looking at my box score. I'm like, oh, my God, Jack Flaherty still ended up going 6 innings. But, you know, Oakland's one of those teams, and we see this with the bad teams, Greg. Oakland and the bad teams, they get on these stretches where their offense works. It's almost very contagious. So when you start seeing Oakland scoring some runs, you may want to maybe slightly back their team total overs, because you're going to see a lot of 2.5s, 3.5s with Oakland, especially against good pitching. Maybe you want to go the first 5 route. They're not quite the Atlanta Braves in the first 5 innings, but like when they're starting to hit, it gets kind of contagious. And so maybe you find that little stretch where for 4 or 5 games, Oakland's hitting the ball and you want to back them. They hit Jack Flaherty pretty well here on Sunday.
Yep, they certainly did. And for Oakland, I even noticed it last year as well. Very, very streaky to say the least. In like early June, they had like a nice 5 game heater and then they went straight down the toilet bowl. So do not be shy to abandon ship right when it goes bad as well. But certainly they can be very streaky as well. Matt, anything else that you're going to be taking a look at for the betting board for Monday?
So I'll be interested to see, and we just talked about this, the Rays and how much they're striking out. Man, I always take the unders when it comes to Anderson's strikeout props. But I just might have to look at the over. If they put up a 3.5 or a 4.5, and we just talked about the Rays are striking out at a very nice clip right now. And so, once again, we're talking about contagious, and this is contagious right now. So a guy that I would fade. But here's the thing, and I know you probably have this too. Like when you want to, and I know how much you put your numbers together and everything, but like one of my systems is if there's a guy I like to fade, it's very hard for me to back them. So if I do back Tyler Anderson and he loses and I'm like, oh my God, it's because you backed a guy you never wanted to back. But look, the Rays are striking out a ton. And then it'll be interesting to see, can Kyle Freeland get the Diamondbacks out? What's the weather going to be like in Colorado? Is there going to be a wind situation? We've seen the wind be a factor in Coors Field the last couple of games. Kyle Freeland was awful in Arizona on opening day. Now he's going to Coors Field where you figure the Diamondbacks are going to score a lot of runs. Make sure to check out the weather, as we said, and we talked about way back in the beginning. I mean, we're still in cold time. We're still in wind time. The wind's blowing out. That's going to be something that's going to bring runs. If the wind's blowing in, that's going to certainly help the pitchers. So you want to make sure for Coors Field, everybody just thinks, oh, it's Coors Field. You got to bet overs. Well, if the wind's blowing in or if there's things going on that kind of make it harder to score in Coors Field, you certainly have to be on top of that. And then, of course, here's the other thing. I used to take the unders on the Atlanta K-props. They struck out 7 times against Ryan Nelson on Sunday. That's not great. And now you got Julio Teheran. You know you're going to be on the first 5 over when it comes to the Braves. They went over on Sunday, and you know Julio Teheran's going to struggle. The first book hung a 3.5 for Teheran. And here's the funny thing. They set the under at minus 175, which is almost unbettable. Like, you're never going to, at least I'm never going to bet a minus 175, minus 170 when it comes to K-props or something like that. So I always laugh when the books make the splits so ridiculous that you're like, oh, well, I guess I'm just not going to play it on this day.
Yep, and that's a big thing with player props as well. Unlike what you're going to find with your normal like sides in NFL, what you're going to be able to find with regards to like college basketball, you're going to be paying a lot more juice when it comes to some of these player props as well. And that is something that always does make things a little bit interesting, because like a Julio Teheran K prop, yeah, maybe you're looking at it like a minus 120, minus 125, minus 175. That could be a little bit unpalatable, but I know you, Matt, do an absolutely amazing job when it comes to the player props. When it comes to like the first 5, first 3s, you do a little bit of everything, and you do it so well in baseball. So love to give people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media to other platforms.
Yeah, at Midmajor Matt on Twitter, it's certainly a place to answer any questions that anybody has with regards to props or anything like that. Obviously, Greg does a tremendous job with his databases and his spreadsheets and stuff, and I certainly use them as well. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't have the answers for players and stuff like that. So certainly you can ask me, and if you ever want to know what numbers I have for some of my spreadsheets here, we can certainly do that, because we all want to beat the books. Every 10 a.m. Eastern time, for those of you who like to do the batter props, which I dabble in every once in a while, every 10 a.m. Eastern time, I post some of the notables, who does really well against the pitchers that they're facing, because once again, if you do DFS, you want to know who you want to build your lineups around. And so certainly I like to post that, so that way people can see who has really good numbers against the starting pitchers they figure to face.
Yep, and that's big as well. I feel like you can use historical data trends a little bit more in baseball than other sports. Like trying to look at a college basketball team that's like 9-0 in their last 9 home games against insert specific team here. Yeah, you might be looking at coaching changes. You might be looking at just nobody that was playing in that first game being out there. When it comes to hitter versus batter, that's something that you're able to take a look at a little bit more historically as well. Matt does a great job on that front, and every single time he joins this show, always makes us a little bit smarter. So big thanks to Matt Josephs, better known as Mid Major Matt, for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we catch them all.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! and you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by mid-major Matt. You know him as Matt Josephs if you're out there in the city of Richmond, Virginia, doing great work over there. Does great work over at FDM Bets every single time he joins the show. Feel like we get a little bit smarter. Great insight on player props, what he's been making out of the front half of the season, and so much more. So big thanks to Matt for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at @Junit_D1. We're going to be going in the Las Vegas rotation, or this is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, and any Interleague League games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So without further ado, let's dive in on 9:51, 9:52 on the card. It is the Milwaukee Brewers, and if they're either facing off against these Cincinnati Reds. And yes, we are on to Cincinnati, and they're on to being a very slight favorite. Find them anywhere between -102 to -115, with the Brewers going to be laying as little as even money, as much as -108 on them. Total on this game is 9.5. Under is between -115 to -130. Over is anywhere between +110 and -105. And did sub my total on 9.3 at a 9.5. Going to be looking at the under. But with how much the juice has been shifting, I have to think that we get some nines out there. And if we go to a 9, I'd rather have a 9 over rather than a 9.5 under, just because this is a ballpark that lends itself to plenty of runs. And for Graham Ashcraft, never really been too much of a swing and miss guy. Does a solid job of being able to pitch a contact, but gave up a pair of home runs in his first start out against the Philadelphia Phillies. Someone that just really, in general, doesn't impress me too much. And the Milwaukee Brewers have certainly had his number. I still remember the last time he went up against them last season. He just got completely shellacked when he was at home. He had a start where he gave up 10 runs in 4 innings in the month of June. Did bounce back in his last 2 starts against the Brewers prior to that, but still, I do have my question marks there. And for Aaron Ashby, this is going to be his first start since the 2022 season, so it has been quite a while since we've seen him. And Aaron Ashby just has never really lent a lot of length. The last time he went north of 5 innings in a start, you have to go back to August 14th of 2022. He's got really good stuff, but the command has never been there. He's now coming off of surgery as well, so lots of question marks on that front end. What is also very questionable for the Brewers, these young bats that they've got, though, I feel like we're starting to get some answers with them. You were able to have Jackson Chourio be able to get his first few home runs of his career. He's up to two bombs. He's been able to do a solid job, move the line. Bryce Turang, I don't know if I'm going to fully buy into him quite yet, but he's off to a nice start to the season. They pick up Rhys Hoskins in the offseason as a pair of home runs. Christian Yelich is looking like the Christian Yelich of old, and they go up against the Cincinnati Reds lineup that has been very hit or miss as far as the season, to say the least. As for the Reds, they have now scored four runs or fewer in all but one out of their last five games, and Cincinnati is very much a hitter's ballpark. Spencer Steer has been able to take full advantage of it. He's hitting north of a 400 with three home runs to begin the season, but going back to last year, Ellie De La Cruz was all sorts of inconsistent, continues to be that this season. We got Christian Encarnacion Strand, who's been off to a little bit of a rough start, but I do like the fact that they pick up Jameer Candelario in the offseason. I think that he's going to be able to pick it up a little bit. Jake Fraley, he was out of the fold to begin the season in terms of just starting consistently. They've got him back in the lineup as well. And for the Cincinnati Reds, I do think that they're going to be able to get some good bullpen performance in this one. Lucas Sims, TJ Antone are two guys that I really do like. Alexis Diaz is one of the better closers out there in the big leagues. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, they are also one of the better teams in terms of their bullpen pitching that you're going to find in the big leagues. Joel Piamps, Elvis Piguero, they're very good in the middle part of that bullpen. Ebner Uribe, he has been able to do a very solid job filling in the ninth inning for the currently injured Devin Williams. So I do think that both of these bullpens hold it down, but have some question marks with Ashcraft, have a lot of question marks with Aaron Ashby, and I just don't know how far Ashby is going to go, and as a result, I have to fade the Brewers in this spot. I did set the Brewers at a plus 138, just not knowing what we're going to be able to get out of Aaron Ashby, and like I said, if I had a choice between a 9.5 under and a 9 over, I would be looking at this 9 over, so going to be trying to get that 9 over, and looking at the Reds on the money line, set them as a minus 138 favorite. 953, 954 on the betting board, the Atlanta Braves are going to be playing us the New York Mets. Urio Teran goes for the Mets, and Charlie Morton is on the bump for the Braves, and the Braves are pretty sizable favorites. Going to be getting them anywhere between minus 215 to minus 235, plus 185 to plus 195 is that number on the Metropolitans. 9.5 to 10 is the total on the 9.5. Overs between minus 115 to a minus 125. Unders any between minus 105 to plus 105. Meanwhile, on the 10, the under is minus 115 and the over is minus 105. Did something total at 9.7. Here at a 10, I'm going to be looking at the under now. Not really a vote of confidence for Urio Teran if you look at what he did towards back half of the season. Last 8 appearances, he posted up an ERA that was well north of 5. He was giving up the deep ball last 36 and a third innings. He gave up 10 home runs, but he does a nice job not giving up a lot of walks. His walks per 9 rate last year was hovering in that neighborhood of about 2 to 2.5, so I do think that he's going to be able to lend a little bit of length for a Mets bullpen that's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. They would love to be able to get to Edwin Diaz. That means that they'd be leading in the ninth inning, and getting him back for this year is absolutely massive, but guys in front of him, you're going to get some solid performances out of the likes of Adam Ottavino. You want to be avoiding Yoan Ramirez. He has been absolutely terrible this year, but Jake Diekman had a nice season last year with the Tampa Bay Rays, but doesn't quite compare to what you've got with the Atlanta Braves. This is a Death Star lineup that 1 through 9, everyone is a threat to be able to go deep for you, aside from maybe the backup catcher in Chadwick Trump, and I wouldn't doubt if they turn him into a 300 hitter as well. Jared Kelnick has found it with the team. They get back Adam Duvall. He's back to hitting home runs. Matt Olson had 50-plus home runs last season. Orlando Arcia is seeing the ball very well. Just 1 through 9. It's a tremendous lineup. And for Charlie Morton, did he overperform a little bit last season? Yes, but even at his advanced age, he's still able to give you north of 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. Did last season. Now, you always fear the walks with him. He does give you about 3.5 walks per 9 innings, which does leave it up to the bullpen quite a bit. But if he can just give you 5 relatively solid innings, you're going to be in good shape. As Pierce Johnson, ever since he came over from the San Diego Padres and the Colorado Rockies, has been able to supply you with a sub-3 ERA in this bullpen. I believe it's actually a sub-250 ERA. You've got Rocio Iglesias, who's really good in the back half for this team. You've been able to get back Dylan Lee. You've also got a healthy AJ Minter along with Kirby Yates as well. So, do love this bullpen. Big thing for Charlie Morton is just being able to keep things relatively consistent. Over the last few years, has been very good at home. Has been so great on the road. But with this New York Mets team just having all sorts of struggles right now, as Pete Alonso has been able to give you a few home runs. But for this team, you've got so many guys at the front that you expect to be so good, like Francisco Lindor, Brad Brandon Nimmo, Harrison Bader, Jeff McNeil, all these guys are hitting below a 200. They've been a rudderless ship thus far this season. I do think that the Atlanta Braves are going to be able to take it to the Mets then. That's a big reason why I do like the 10 under rather than the 10.5 over, just because I don't think that the Mets are necessarily going to be doing their part with regards to this total. So it is a circumstance where with the Braves, I'd be willing to lay up to a minus 120 on the run line. Right now, seeing a lot of places that have this more in that neighborhood, about a minus 115. And if I am indeed getting a minus 115 on that run line, I'm going to be willing to lay it and going to be looking at the 10 under. 955, 956 on the betting board. The Philadelphia Phillies at the road, they're facing off against the St. Louis Cardinals. Miles Michaelis goes for the Cards. Spencer Turnbull is on the bump for the Phillies, and the Phillies do find themselves as very slight underdogs, anywhere between minus 105 to a plus 105. Meanwhile, between minus 105 to minus 115 is that number on St. Louis, and 9 is the total. The under is minus 120. Over is even. I'm going to be looking at the over. I did set my total at 9.2. Spencer Turnbull looked really good in his first start of the season, but he has made 11 starts or fewer in every single one of his years since the 2020 campaign. So massive question marks as to whether or not he's going to be able to stay healthy. And even when he got starts last season, he posted up north of a 70 ERA, looked much better in spring training, but I still need to see a little bit more before I'm able to believe in him. And for Miles Michaelis, I know that what I'm getting here, and it's someone that is going to throw a lot of strikes. His walks per nine rate last season was sub 2, and he has been able to get 9 strikeouts in 10 of the third innings this season, but that's come with getting tagged for 7 runs, and he just has been giving up a lot of doubles. He doesn't necessarily give up a ton of home runs, but he gives up a lot of general contact. He very much is a pitcher contact guy, and when it comes to the Phillies, I do think that they're going to get a little bit more online. I was mentioning before with our good friend in mid-major Matt that Bryce Harper had that 3 home run game. Past that, he hasn't necessarily done a whole heck of a lot, though. I do think that he's going to be able to pick it up moving forward. JT Realmuto, I think, is going to be fine. And Trey Turner, he had a really slow start to the year last year. He's been out of the gates a little bit cold to begin the season. I think that he, Alec Boehm, are going to be a little bit more consistent at being able to move line. And I do think that going up against a St. Louis Cardinals unit, that they've got a rough bullpen is a good way to be able to start, as the only guy that had a sub-3.5 ERA a season ago that is a part of the bullpen once again this season, that'd be Ryan Helsley. And you're relying upon guys like Matthew Liberatore, Ryan Fernandez, Giovanni Gallegos to be able to hold down the fort. And I do have my question marks there, but for the Phillies, it just feels like the bullpen in general always gets off to a relatively rough start for them as well. Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarado, they've had a bit of a tough go of it to begin the season. Matt Strom, he's a little bit up and down as well, but is able to provide a little bit of length. I do like what Junior Marte was able to do towards the back half of the season, and Jeff Hoffman relatively solid as well, and they have to go up against a St. Louis Cardinals lineup that they did fall to the Miami Marlins yesterday. And for the Cardinals, they have been having a little bit of a tough time with run creation. They have now scored 3 runs or fewer in 3 of their last 4 games, but you know the potential is there with them, and you know that they're going to be able to pick it up. Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, a combined one, a home run between the two of them. You know that they're going to be much better when it's all said and done. Nolan Gorman, he's able to provide some good power. And right now, the only guy in the roster that has been able to give you multiple home runs other than Wilson Contreras, and I think that he's going to be able to be in for a very good year this year. And Ivan Herrera, when he's got at-bats for the St. Louis Cardinals right now, so far so good out of him. It's a young outfield that has quite a few guys that do a solid job moving the line. Jordan Walker, Alec Burleson, Brendan Donovan. I think that these guys are going to be in for some relatively solid seasons, and Donovan does have some pretty demonstrative home and road splits with regards to his hitting. He hits much better when he is at home, and I do think that that's going to be the case moving forward. I'd like to see them get Lars Nootbaar in the fold sooner rather than later, but that said, in Turnbull versus Michaelis, I recognize that Michaelis is not a guy that I want to be backing too much, but I did set him at a minus 113 just because the Phillies bullpen, a little bit out of sorts. They have to deal with travel, and right now the Phillies aren't in such great form, and I do think that the Cardinals are going to be able to relatively solid at home, so I'm going to be taking a look at the 9 over, set my total at 9.2, and do like the Cardinals up to minus 112 on that money line. Now let's set my DK Network ride to pick. 957, 958 on the card. It is the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they're going to be on the road facing off against the Colorado Rockies. Kyle Freeland goes for the Rockies, and Zach Gallen is on the bump for Arizona, and Arizona, massive favorites here, anywhere between minus 163 to minus 190. Meanwhile, between plus 148 to plus 158 is your number on Colorado. 10.5 is the total in most spots. We're seeing a few stray 11s. The under juice on the 11 is minus 125. Over is plus 105 on the 10.5. Over is minus 105 to minus 115. And same goes for the under. And my right up here is going to be on the over. Did set my total at 11.9. Now, I will say in Colorado, it is a little bit chilly. There is a little bit of wind, as Matt was alluding to. But I take a look at the way that Zach Gallen pitched on the road as opposed to at home last season, night and day difference. When he was at home, he was tremendous. 2.47 ERA, 0.6 home runs, 1.6 walks per 9 innings. On the road, 1.25 home runs, 2.5 walks, and a 4.43 ERA. And those were per 9 inning numbers on the home runs and walks. So you do have your concerns there. And for Zach Gallen, he just threw so many innings last year, north of 240 in total between the regular season and the postseason. Led the league in innings pitched, and I do think that that's going to catch up with him a little bit. And it's not like this Arizona Diamondbacks bullpen is necessarily lighting the world on fire. Luis Frias, Miguel Castro, got some question marks there. Joe Mantiply has been relatively rough since being an all-star a few seasons ago. Dude like Ryan Thompson, Scott Magoo, guys like this, but the bullpen support, not necessarily all the way there, but this lineup has been very tremendous for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Going into Sunday, they're averaging about 6.6 runs per game, and these two teams core off to begin the season out there in Arizona. In that four-game series, Arizona went 3-1 and scored 32 runs across four games, and they absolutely tattooed Kyle Freeland. Freeland gave up 10 runs without getting 10 outs in that first start, and overall for the season, he's recorded 17 outs, and he's given up 17 runs. I do think that he's going to improve upon an ERA of 27, but my goodness, it has not been a great start to the season for him, and his velocity is up while Zach Gallen's is down. His is actually up, but he has just been absolutely awful in general, and for Kyle Freeland, he does have a career ERA that is higher at home rather than on the road. He doesn't necessarily give out a bunch of walks or anything like that, but he just gets hit really hard. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, they have really been able to light it up coming out of the gates with regards to their offense, as Lourdes Gurriel, Ketel Marte, Christian Walker, 3 home runs apiece in the first 10 games of the season. Everyone other than Walker hitting above a 300 for this unit. You haven't even necessarily gotten Corbin Carroll going, 333 on base, but hitting just a 200. He's yet to get his first home run season. And Eugenio Suarez, he's hitting above a 300. Jake McCarthy has been able to do a solid job moving the line. I like the way that the Diamondbacks are performing. Then the Colorado Rockies just always have the most demonstrative home and road splits in the league when it comes to scoring. Last year scored 3.65 runs per game with a 229 batting average away from home. At home, 266 batting average, more like about 5.4 runs per contest. And for the Colorado Rockies, you've gotten Ryan McMahon going, hitting well above a 300. He's been able to supply the boom with a pair of home runs. Ezekiel Tovar actually has a pair of home runs, and he's gone off to a decent start to the season. Brandon Rodgers, I don't know why they're continuing with this experiment. He, Nolan Jones, Eliardis, Montero, these guys are hitting below the middle side of 200, and I do think that Jones is going to pick it up after he had 20-plus home runs last season, but I think that it's a lost season for Rodgers. Chris Bryant looks completely lost at the plate as well, but I do think that they're going to be able to find a little bit more now that they are out there in Coors Field. And for the Colorado Rockies, entered into Sunday with an ERA north of 6 in the bullpen. You don't really have too many trustworthy guys in general. Tyler Kinley, I guess, is okay for this bullpen, but the likes of Jake Bird, Anthony Molina, Victor Vodnik, Justin Lawrence, not something that you want to be banking on. I do think that you get runs aplenty in this spot, so my DK Network right a pick that is on the over. And with the run line of the Arizona Diamondbacks, I'm going to be willing to lay it. You're finding it between minus 115 to a minus 125, semi more around a minus 132. So, like the Diamondbacks on the run line, and my right a pick that is going to be on the over. 959, 960 on the betting board. The Slam Diego Padres playoffs, the Chicago Cubs. Javier Assad is on the bump for the Cubs, and yeah, you, Darvish, on the bump for the Padres. Padres are anywhere between minus 133 to minus 142 favorites, anywhere between plus 118 to plus 125. Your number on the Cubs, 7.5 to 8 is the total on the 7.5. Over is between minus 115 to a minus 120. The under is between even a minus 105. On the 8, under is minus 125. The over is plus 105. And I did set the Padres at a minus 144 on the money line. Right now, seeing about minus 135 or so, I'm going to be willing to lay it. Javier Assad, as a starter, has had really good numbers dating back to the back half of last season. I just wonder how much of it is built on sand a little bit, as for Javier Assad, he does give out a few walks. He's not someone that necessarily has put away pitches. His strikeouts per nine rate well below 7.5 when he's been in a starter's role, but somehow, some way, he was able to light it up when he was able to get starts last season. And you just take a look at him throughout his career in a starter's role, it has been a case where the fielding independent just does not match up with the ERA. ERA of a 280 as a starter, but he's given up in that time span right around about 1.2 home runs per nine innings, worth of 3.5 walks per 9. And if you take a look at the entirety of the 2023 season as a starter and as a reliever, his fielding independent 429 compared to a 305 ERA. Meanwhile, you've got a guy in Yu Darvish who got a little bit unlucky last season. It felt like he pitched a little bit better than what he was given credit for, and he's come out this season and has looked much better. He did give up a few walks in the Seoul series, but he's back to getting 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's only given up one home run thus far in his 3 starts, and he's backed up by a San Diego Padres lineup that it's not quite what it was a season ago with Juan Soto being out of the fold, but you still have Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado in the middle of the lineup. These two guys have a combined 5 home runs this season. Machado hasn't hit for average, Tatis has, but Jake Cronenworth is hitting above 300 after he had a rough year last year. He's back to form, and Luis Campisano, just such a big upgrade at the catcher spot than what you had from the likes of Gary Sanchez and company a season ago. Meanwhile, for the Chicago Cubs, you have Cody Bellinger, who can be a fearsome guy, but I don't think he's going to get much more than like 25 or so home runs, but you've got balance with this team as Bellinger, C.A. Suzuki, Christopher Morel, Dansby Swanson all have multiple home runs this season, and other than Bellinger, all these guys have been able to hit north of a 285. Ian Happ has yet to go deep, but he's been able to move the line with north of a 400 on base. Dansby Swanson north of a 400 on base as well. Michael Busch has been able to find a way on. Nick Madrigal does a solid job on that front as well, and both of these teams, I feel like, have pretty comparable bullpens. Adbert Alzolay has become a nice closer for this team. Yancy Almonte has been able to lend some solid innings in this league. You've got Hector Neris, who was acquired in the offseason, but do have a few question marks when it comes to more of the long guys as well. And for the Cubs, you also have question marks because they had that long rain delay against the LA Dodgers. So that causes for a little bit more just dysfunctional travel. And I do think that's going to hurt them a little bit here in game number one. Meanwhile, for the San Diego Padres, by the way, going back to the lineup, Jackson Merrill looking very good as a rookie for them. And you do have a few rolls of the dice when it comes to bullpen. Yuki Matsui, Stephen Kolick, are these guys going to be rock solid? But pick up Wandy Peralta, Anya De Los Santos, guys that last year had a sub-3.5 ERA. You've got towards back half of the bullpen, Robert Suarez, who's relatively solid as well. So I'm going to be willing to back the Padres in this spot to set them at a minus 144. And with regards to total, I did set mine at a 7.7. This is very much a pitcher's ballpark out there. And I do think that Assad starts to see a little bit of regression. So between a 7.5 to an 8, I'd rather have the 7.5 over rather than the 8 under. So looking there with that minus 115 juice especially, and looking at the Padres on the money line, wouldn't want to go run line. Keep it to the money line to go along with the over. 961, 962 on the betting board. The Washington Nationals are on the road facing off against the San Francisco Giants. Blake Snell goes for the Giants. Trevor Williams is on the bump for Washington. 8 is the total. Under is minus 115. The over is minus 105. With the Giants there, anywhere between minus 233 and minus 250 favorites. And between plus 197 to plus 215 is your number on the Washington Nationals. And total on this game is 8 again. And I'm going to be taking a look at it under. I set my total at 7.9. If it wasn't for the fact that he was going up against the Washington Nationals, I would be a little bit more inclined to fade Blake Snell. If you're looking at the run line of the Giants, you're going to be laying minus 115. I was willing to go up to minus 124. Trevor Williams is just a rough pitcher in general, but this is very much a pitcher's ballpark. And for Blake Snell, you have question marks as to how far he's going to be able to go in this game. I would think probably about 80, 85 pitches. The Giants typically are utilizing kids' gloves in these sorts of scenarios, and I wouldn't expect anything different in this one, even though they do move on from Gabe Kapler in the offseason. But Blake Snell issued a lot of walks last season, well north of 4 walks per 9 innings, but strikeout numbers were there. He was in a pretty similar pitcher-friendly ballpark in San Diego as he is here. And for the Washington Nationals, while they did fortify their lineup a little bit, bringing in the likes of Jesse Winker, Joey Gallo, along with Eddie Rosario, but this is still a team that has been lacking a little bit in the power department, despite the fact that Gallo has given you multiple home runs, and we all know about his swing and miss ability, which that's a departure from what we've seen from the Nationals in past years, because last year they were very good at not striking out, being able to put the ball in play, but they just didn't have a lot of power in general. So guys like CJ Abrams being able to move the line, giving this team right now quite a few stolen bases, giving you north of a 350 on base. That's been beneficial, but Lane Thomas has come out of the gate cold. He's been not able to hit the ball at the yard yet, hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. You like what you're seeing out of Luis Garcia, who's hitting above a 300, but Kiba Ruiz, Joey Meneses, these guys have been a little bit hit or miss as well. And for the Washington Nationals, it's not a terrible bullpen. It's not a great bullpen. You've been able to get some relatively solid innings out of the likes of Derek Law, Hunter Harvey, Jordan Weems. I do like these guys. Tanner Rainey trying to come back from injury as well. And Trevor Williams. This is the sort of ballpark that isn't too bad for him because he does give up quite a bit of contact, and for that matter, he does give up quite a bit of hard contact as well for his career, giving up well north of 1.35 home runs per 9 innings. But first start out against the Pittsburgh Pirates, gave up 2 runs over the course of 5 and a third innings, actually led the team to victory in that one. I do think that Blake Snell going to be dominant in this one as well, though, and I just don't think that the Nationals really going to get to he along with that bullpen that involves Rogers Square. You've got Camilo Duvall, who's a good closer, will be going on a back-to-back for Duvall, but I think that with his small workload to begin the season, he'll be just fine there, and I do think that you get a lower scoring game that the San Francisco Giants are going to be able to pull out. I was willing to lay up to a minus 120 or so with regards to this run line, set at more of around a minus 124, so getting minus 115, willing to trust in Snell and the Giants on the run line, and looking at this 8 under. 963, 964 on the betting board. This game is off the board between the Chicago White Sox and the Cleveland Guardians. A homestanding Guardians send Tristan McKenzie to the mound, and it is undecided on the bump for the White Sox. This is a game that is to be determined, and I literally just went off of Fangraphs in terms of the projected start for the White Sox of Chad Kuhl. This is subject to some change. I will be doing some mining late at night, early in the morning, to try to find who the White Sox are going to be starting, and this could very well be a bullpen game for the White Sox, but if it is Chad Kuhl, and perhaps even like someone like a Tanner Banks, who they currently have in the bullpen as a long guy, will be setting the Guardians right around about a minus 214. That's what I said in terms of Kuhl versus Tristan McKenzie. We'll be willing to lay up to a minus 110 on the Guardians run line. And then semi total to wear an 8.5 or less, looking at the over 9 or higher to the under. Tristan McKenzie, rough start to the season. First start out, he goes 3 1/3 innings, gets completely lit up, but I still go back to what he was able to do during the 2022 campaign when he had a sub-3 ERA, got 9 punchouts for 9 innings, looked really, really good, and Cleveland, one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks in the big leagues. He's going to be backed up by a relatively solid bullpen, even with James Karinchak right now dealing with an injury. You've got Emmanuel Clase, one of the best closers out there in all of baseball, and Tim Aaron, after he was rough last season, he's looked relatively solid. If you can get Hunter Gaddis, Scott Barlow to give you good innings, they're going to be in relatively good shape. And for the White Sox, at this point, unless if they're signing Bob Gibson in his prime, this is going to be really rough for them, as they've got no bullpen pitching whatsoever. Tim Hill is a guy that they pick up from the Padres. Not feeling him too much. Steven Wilson, honestly, might be relatively okay along Dominique Leon, but you take a look at the likes of John Brebbia, Davey Garcia, and company that you're looking to back, and that's not great. Jordan Leisure actually might be able to give you a little bit of something, but the problem for the White Sox is they're just an undisciplined team in general. The Chicago White Sox unit does not have anyone that's willing to draw a walk. You've gotten a pair of home runs this far this season out of both Paul DeJong and Luis Robert. Robert, he's been able to give you a little bit of power, but again, 214 batting average, 241 on base. This White Sox team as a collective is hitting right around the Mendoza line of 200. Andrew Benintendi has not been able to get on base. Andrew Vaughn is like the lone guy that's willing to draw a walk, along with Yoel Moncada as well, and for Vaughn, it's been a rough start to the season for him. He and Moncada both have 0 home runs apiece. Nicky Lopez is giving you nothing whatsoever. And for the Cleveland Guardians, this team does not have a lot of power. You've got Bo and Josh Naylor, who might be able to give you a little bit of something towards the middle part of the season, but that's going to be more to the tune of about like 20 or so home runs. You don't have anyone that I think is going to give you north of 25 bombs, but you've got guys that are able to do a solid job being able to get on base, move the line. Andrés Giménez, Jose Ramirez, Brian Rocchio, guys like this, I do like. I do think that there's going to be quite a bit moving forward for Stephen Kwan as well. He's already went deep once this year. He's hitting about a 350. Once again, not a guy that's going to take his base a lot. This Cleveland Guardians team, they swing it a lot, but they don't swing and miss too much as well, which is something that you do like. They find a way to be able to get on base. Going against the White Sox team that is throwing out their mystery pitcher, most likely Chad Kuhl. And you do get Chad Kuhl last few seasons. He's had north of a 5 ERA. Has never been a high strikeout guy. Does allow a lot of hard contact. And if it's someone else, well, it's probably not going to be good because it's the Chicago White Sox. I wish I could put it any other way. So if it is Chad Kuhl, someone of that nature for the White Sox, willing to lay up to a minus 110 with that Guardians run line, would need at least a plus 215 to take a shot on the White Sox money line. Then in after less, looking over 9 or higher, the under. 965, 966 on the betting board. The Toronto Blue Jays playoffs to the Seattle Mariners. Luis Castillo is on the bump for Seattle, and Jose Barrios is on the bump for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays find themselves anywhere between minus 112 to minus 120 favorites. Between even money and plus 108 is that number on the Seattle Mariners, and the total is between 8 and 8.5. On the 8, overs between minus 115 to minus 120. The under is anywhere between even to minus 105. On the 8.5, the under is between minus 115 to minus 120. The over is anywhere between even and minus 105. And bids on my total at 8.1. Mostly seeing 8s out there, and I'm willing to take an 8 over. Luis Castillo, throughout his career, has had north of 4 ERA in starts in the month of March/April, off to a relatively rough start this season, and he always has been very inconsistent when he has been on the road. He has worked on his walks issues in recent years, thus far just 3 walks in his 10 and a third innings, but he's getting it relatively hard. He's still getting north of 9 strikeouts per 9 innings, but he's allowing a lot of balls over the plate, and they're getting it relatively hard in general. Pair of home runs surrendered, and for Jose Barrios, actually a really good start to the season. 12 innings pitch across 2 starts, giving up 3 runs, and for Barrios, he's always had an ERA about a point better when he is at home, whether that be with the Blue Jays or the Minnesota Twins, rather than on the road. Now, the question for the Toronto Blue Jays is, can their offense get online? 3 runs or fewer scored for them in 7 out of their last 9 games, and I think that it's fair to say we've overrated quite a few of these guys for the Toronto Blue Jays over their careers. Bo Bichette, Vlad Guerrero Jr. are right now off to very rough starts. Both of these guys hitting below a 200. George Springer, I feel like he's going to pick it up, but he just has not been able to give you a whole lot on anything in general. Alejandro Kirk hitting below 200. As a matter of fact, your top 5 players in terms of total at-bats for the Toronto Blue Jays, all hitting below 200. That is terrible. But you bring in Justin Turner, he's been able to give the team a home run, 400 on base. He's been relatively solid. Ernie Clement has actually given you some halfway decent at-bats. I like Davis Schneider. He's right now leading the team with a pair of home runs along with Vlad Guerrero Jr. But I do think that for the Blue Jays, they're going to be able to find it a little bit more in this ordeal. And both of these bullpens are dealing with quite a few injuries, as you've got Gabe Spire, Gregory Santos, and Matt Brash dealing with injuries for the Seattle Mariners. Meanwhile, for the Toronto Blue Jays, Eric Swanson along Jordan Romano. These are guys that are currently out of the fold, so that does mean that the back half for both of these teams is going to be a little bit more rough. You need Yimi Garcia to be able to pick it up for the Toronto Blue Jays. Tim Mesa, though, is something I do like. And for the Mariners, they're just a factory of really good bullpen pitching. Ryan Stanek, Trent Thornton, Taylor Cicado. These are all guys you're able to trust in to be able to get the ball to Andres Munoz, but I do think that for Castillo, going to be a little bit of a rough go of it for him here, and I do think that the Blue Jays get a little bit more online with regards to their bats, and I do think that for Seattle, a team that was one of the best in the big leagues at being able to put bat to ball away from home a season ago, their offensive numbers are always warped a little bit just because they play in one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks in the big leagues, that they are going to be able to find it a bit more. Mitch Haniger, he's back with like his 20th stint with the Seattle Mariners. He's been rock solid at being a move of line this season, 370 on base for he along Ty France. You've had Julio Rodriguez get off to a little bit of a rough start along J.P. Crawford. That's par for the course for those guys. Dominic Canzone, he's been able to give you a pair of home runs. Need a little bit more than a 174 on base out of him, and I do think that the Seattle Mariners are going to be able to get to Barrios a little bit in this one. I do like the form of Barrios as well, but don't necessarily like the back half of the bullpen, so I'm looking at that 8 over. And with Toronto, I'm going to be willing to back them on the money line, set Toronto as a -122 favorite. 967, 968 on the betting board. The Walker Texas Rangers play OC Houston Astros. Framber Valdez is on the bump for the Astros, and Andrew Heaney is on the bump for Texas. Texas is back to being an underdog between +120 to +125. Meanwhile, with the Astros, they're between -132 to -142 favorites. Meanwhile, the total, that is 10. The under is -115. The over is -105, and did set my total at a 9.7. Here at a 10, I think that we've went too far. I'm going to be looking at the under. This is despite the fact that Framber Valdez has given up 3-plus runs in 13 out of his last 19 starts. Just has not been able to find it in general. I'm not sure what's happened with Framber Valdez since the middle part of last season. I know that he was dealing with a few injuries, but that's certainly been ailing him. But coming off of a really nice start his last time out, and thus far has been able to do a nice job mitigating hard contact. First 2 starts of the season, as he had to give up a home run. 7 2/3 innings scoreless against Toronto, did give up 6 hits along the way, and when Framber Valdez is at his best, honestly, it's not necessarily when he's getting a whole bunch of swings and misses. He's given out a few walks, but he's doing a nice job keeping things out in front of him. He's focusing on mitigating hard contact, and for Andrew Heaney, first start of the season was not too bad for him as well. He only goes 4 2/3 innings against the Tampa Bay Rays, but gives up 1 earned run. There were a few unearned runs. He was just badly hurt by his fielding. He got 7 strikeouts, so I don't think that he's in the world's worst form. And for Texas, they bring in a pair of guys to be able to revamp the bullpen, and David Robertson along with Kirby Yates. That's big because they have the nice core pieces from a season ago as well. You've got Josh Boris, who's able to give you a relatively solid inning or two. You've been able to have Jose Leclerc really be able to step up for the team. And for the Astros, they were 8th in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA a season ago, while the Rangers were 24th. But just feels like the Rangers bullpen is in a little bit of better form. Josh Hader has been a bit of a roll of the dice here at the beginning of the season. Even in the game yesterday, I believe that he gave up a run towards the back half of it as well. Ryan Presley, he's a hit or miss setup guy for the team. I actually really like what Brian Abreu is able to bring to the table, but they lose some of these guys like Ryan Stanek and company from a season ago, so now they're looking to Miguel Diaz to be able to pick it up. And for the Houston Astros, Jordan Alvarez, nice three-run homer for him yesterday, but this Astros lineup typically does get off to rough starts. 14th in the league or worse with regards to runs per game each of the last two seasons. You've got Alex Bregman having one of his pendant slow starts. He's hitting below the Mendoza line of 200 right now. You've been able to get quite a bit out of Yennier Diaz. He's hitting above 300. I absolutely love him at the catcher spot. Much of an upgrade as compared to Martin Maldonado, but Jose Abreu has not been able to get stuck out of neutral. You've got John Singleton, who's giving you a big, giant nothing burger. Jose Altuve has been able to move the line, but some of these guys towards the bottom, like Mauricio Dubon, they need to pick it up. And for the Texas Rangers, really 1-9 has been very good for the team. They weren't able to hit yesterday, but still a bunch that's averaging well north of 6 runs per contest. Evan Carter needs to pick it up a little bit. He's hitting below 200, but we got guys like Jared Walsh, Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, all hitting above 300. All these guys are power threats. Wyatt Langford off to a little bit of a slow start to his career. You got to feel like he's going to be able to pick it up as well, and I do think that for the Texas Rangers, they do a solid job of being able to put some runs up on the board. Andrew Heaney, though, he's always known for giving up the home runs, has been giving up north of 1.5 home runs per 9 innings throughout his career, going up against an Astros team that they've been a little bit all or nothing this year. I do think that the Astros do get to him here, and I do think that for Framber Valdez, he's starting to find a little bit more of something after that last start against Toronto. Did set my total at 9.7 here at the 10, looking at the under of the Astros, set them at a minus 133. So being able to get the minus 132 that I'm seeing, it's my max buy point on the Astros, but it's a buy point for them on the money line to go along with this total under 969, 970 on the betting board. It is the Tampa Bay Rays. They are on the road. They're facing off against the LA Angels. Tyler Anderson is on the bump for the Halos, and Zach Eflin hopes to not be Eflin awful for the Tampa Bay Rays. Rays are anywhere between minus 135 to minus 140 favorites, and we're between plus 124 to plus 130 is your number on the Angels. 8.5 is the total. Over and under, anywhere between minus 105 to a minus 115, and set the Rays at a minus 142 on the money line. If you're looking at their run line, laying a run half, you're getting that right around about plus 115. I would rather stick with the money line here. It is a Tampa Bay Rays team that's been a little bit up and down to begin the season. Heck, we just saw them win a one-run game yesterday against the Colorado Rockies, so we're going to play a little bit more conservatively here as Zach Eflin has been very consistent home to road throughout his career. When he was in Philadelphia, did have some road struggles, but last season on the road, he was still giving up fewer than 2 walks per 9, and he still did a relatively solid job of being able to mitigate hard contact, so I feel good about him going into the start. Meanwhile, for Tyler Anderson, it feels like whenever you fade him, he actually gives you a really good performance, and if you look to back him, he's going to stink it up. Last season, he was not good, to say the least. He has never been a swing-and-miss guy, even when he had his big year out there with the Los Angeles Dodgers a few seasons ago when he had a 2.57 ERA. His strikeouts per 9 rate was below 7, and last season with the LA Angels, he was able to go 5-5, but very misleading. He got about 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, was giving out north of 3 walks per 9 innings, gave out a bunch of hard contact, and this is an Angels bullpen that just doesn't compare to that of the Tampa Bay Rays. You've got the likes of Colin Pouchet, Pete Fairbanks, Jason Adam. They're all able to do a very solid job in that bullpen, and I even like Eric Clevenger, but he's able to provide it. The back half, if you're able to get to Carlos Acevedo, Matt Moore, it's looked relatively solid for the Angels, but Adam Simber, well, his ERA went timber last season. He had north of a 7 ERA. Jose Cicierno is a reclamation project that is very much a hit-or-miss sort of ordeal. And for the LA Angels, you've got to question the bats for this team as well. 3 runs or fewer scored in 3 out of their last 5 games. You know what Mike Trout is going to bring to the table. 4 home runs already, 350 on base. He has been tremendous. And Logan O'Hoppe is someone I do like. He's off to a nice start this season. He's given the team a home run north of a 4 on base. But Anthony Rendon, he's north of 1 hit now. Oh, yay, barely there, but he, along with Nate Chenault, Zach Neto, Aaron Hicks, these are guys that I just don't know if they're going to give you too much this season. Miguel Sano has actually found a way to be able to get on base a little bit, but I need very nearly ate his way out of Minnesota. And for the Tampa Bay Rays, I do think that they're going to be able to get a relatively good start out of Eflin. I have massive question marks with Tyler Anderson, so did set my total at a 9.3 here at the 8.5. I'm going to be looking at the over. I do think that the Tampa Bay Rays going to be able to get their bats going. They had just 3 runs yesterday. yesterday against Colorado Rockies, but this is a Rays unit that they've got functional power out of so many of their guys. Isaac Paredes had 30-plus home runs last season. Randy Arozarena, Yandy Diaz. These are guys that are able to provide 20 to 25 home runs while being able to do a good job of getting on base. Harold Ramirez hit well above a 300 last season. And Jerick Calabreo, that was a really good pickup in the offseason. He's got good speed. He's already got 4 stolen bases, as he and Jose Siri actually have 10 stolen bases between the two of them. So the Rays, if they're able to just get these guys on base, they're able to move them over, generate some runs. I do think that they're going to do so here. So I do like the over and the Rays on the money line. 971, 972 on the main board. The New York Yankees play us the Miami Marlins. Jesus Luzardo is on the bump for Miami, and Nestor Cortes is on the bump for the Yankees. And the Yankees are a favorite of anywhere between minus 150 to minus 165. Anywhere between plus 136 to plus 145 is that number on Miami. Eight is the total. Over is between minus 115 to a minus 120. The under is between even a minus 105. And if you're looking at that Yankees run line laying a run half, you're able to get right around plus 122 to plus 125. I'm willing to take it. I won't take anything of a plus 105 or greater with the New York Yankees. Now, Nestor Cortes, bad form to begin the season for him, well north of a 5 ERA, got walloped in his first two starts, and it was really that first inning in both of those starts. Calm down from there, but for Nestor Cortes, since the beginning of the 2022 season, his ERA at home is a full point and a half better than it is away from home. For Cortes, does need to calm down the walks, 4 walks in his first 10 innings of the season, but now he gets to face off against a Miami Marlins unit that, yes, they were able to come together, they were able to get some good runs against the St. Louis Cardinals yesterday, but on I look at this lineup, and I've got my question marks. Luis Arraez along Tim Anderson, they give you no power whatsoever, and when these guys aren't moving the line, it's rough for them. Both of these guys are combined at about a 275, so not too shabby there. You've got Jake Berger, who's been able to give you a pair of home runs, but he's pretty much the only power bat for the team now that Orde Soler is out of the fold. You've got some upside with the outfield, Brian De La Cruz, Avisio Garcia, Asus Sanchez. These are guys that should hit, but Garcia, Alon Sanchez, both hitting for fewer than a 250 on base percentage, so heavier issues there. And for Miami, they are, for lack of a better term, fish out of water when they're away from home, especially with their star pitcher, Jesus Luzardo, who had a sub-3 ERA when he was at home last season on the road. That went to north of a 4 ERA as he gives up right around about 1.3, 1.4 home runs per 9 innings when he is away from home. And now it's a face-off against the Yankees lineup that is very much revamped. Giancarlo Stanton is actually giving you 3 home runs this season. He's become an all-or-nothing guy with regards to home run ball, but he's at the very least looking a little bit better than he did a season ago. Aaron Judge, as well as Cabrera, both have given you a pair of bombs. Judge has been a little bit slow getting out of the gates, but he's still generating walks. Juan Soto, north of a 4 on base. He's got just 1 home run, but you can tell the profound impact that he's having on this lineup. Even with someone like an Alex Verdugo struggling, you've been able to have other guys be able to step up, hold it down for the team, and for the New York Yankees. They've got by far the better bullpen in this one. Ian Hamilton had a little bit of a rough series against the Toronto Blue Jays, but he, Caleb Ferguson, Jake Cousins, these are unsung guys that are able to do a solid job. Clay Holmes, he's able to lock it down in the ninth inning, though it can sometimes be a little bit of an adventure to get there. Jonathan Loaisiga looks like he's dealing with a little bit of an injury, but all in all, I do like the bullpen of the New York Yankees. Meanwhile, for the Miami Marlins, they do lose guys like Steven Okert from season ago. They brought in David Roberts. Sin, they did not retain him. Tanner Scott is a relatively solid bullpen piece along with Andrew Nardi. Both of these guys had a sub-350 ERA season ago, but Sixto Sanchez, Matt Andreese, Anthony Bender, these are guys that are very tough to be able to get behind. And Jesus Luzardo was a Cy Young candidate coming into the season, but I mean, he's surrounded by a team that I just don't think is going to be able to support him very well. I do like this 8-over as Miami has just been giving up runs upon runs in the bullpen, and for Jesus Luzardo, just not the same pitcher when he's away from home. So I do like the over, and the Yankees laying a run and a half was, won't take anything north of plus 105 there. 973, 974 on the betting board. The Detroit Tigers are on the road facing off against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mitch Keller goes for the Buccos. Reese Olson is on the bump for Detroit. Detroit is an underdog of between plus 105 to plus 112. Meanwhile, between minus 120 to minus 125. That number on Pittsburgh, 8.5 is the total. Seeing straight 8 out there as well. On the 8, over is minus 120. The under is even. On the 8.5, under is minus 115. Over is minus 105. With the Pirates, I would need this to get down about like 2 pennies, so minus 118. As a matter of fact, I'm seeing one that's getting down to a minus 118. Minus 118 or less, going to be willing to back the Pirates. Do have some concerns with Mitch Keller still. First two starts of the season has not been great for him, posting up a 6.55 ERA, and I just noticed his velocity dip in spring training, and it did cause me to be out on him a little bit. 8 punch outs in 11 innings, giving up 4 walks, not necessarily having the world's greatest command, and when you're giving up 4 earned runs in your first two starts against the Washington Nationals, Orioles and the Miami Marlins. That's not terrific, but for the Detroit Tigers, while this does look to be a much more formidable team than they were a season ago, for the Tigers, they've scored 3 runs or fewer and far the last 5 games. What's going to carry the Tigers this season is going to be their pitching. Riley Green does have a trio of home runs for this bunch, but he's hitting below the Mendoza line of 300. As a matter of fact, top 5 guys in terms of total at-bats for the Detroit Tigers, all hitting below a 215 right now. Mark Canha's able to do a nice job of being able to draw walks, and he's got some pop in the bat himself, but Spencer Torkelson has looked lost at the plate to begin the season. Javi Baez, you want to talk about a waste of money. There you go. Parker Meadows not giving you anything whatsoever. And why don't I have Gio Urshela playing every single day? I don't have any idea whatsoever, but I really like him. But for the Tigers, this bullpen is one of the best out there in the big leagues. You don't have that one lockdown closer, but Alex Lang, Tyler Holton, Will Vess, Andrew Chafin, these guys are all very solid. And you got a bullpen on the flip side for the Pittsburgh Pirates I really do like as well. And that's part of the reason why I'm going to be willing to back the Pirates, as that big three in the back half, Aroldis Chapman, David Benar, Ryan Barucki, it's about as good as it gets. Now, Barucki might be out of the fold for this game. Do want to be noting that. But Hunter Strand, he's been able to do a solid job in the bullpen. They get Jose Hernandez back after they had him out of the fold for a few days. And the big question mark with the Pirates as well, can this lineup be able to start to be consistent? Because the talent is there with guys like Oneil Cruz, Cabrian Hayes. Hayes is able to do a nice job moving the line. Cruz is able to give you good power, and it's right now hitting above a 300. Brian Reynolds has been a little bit intermittent to begin the season, but still giving you about a 350 on base. The question mark is Henry Davis, Jack Swinisky. Are these guys going to be able to develop? Because Michael A. Taylor has been a nice find. You bring in a veteran like Rowdy Tellez that's able to pound it out, and I do like this Pirates team in terms of the overall offense that they're able to get. And for Reese Olson, he's a nice developing prospect for the Detroit Tigers, who is going to be a big part of the rotation moving forward. You've had some hits, you've had some misses when it comes to some of these young Tigers pitchers, but I really do like Reese Olson, who the fielding independent shows that he was a little bit unlucky last season. He has a 3.99 fielding independent, about a 3.79 ERA between the 2 seasons that he's played out there in the big leagues. Gives up about 3 walks per 9 innings, but is able to give you right around about 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. He does a relatively okay job of being able to mitigate hard contact. So I do think that you get a little bit of a lower scoring game in this one. Some might sell it at 8.2. Would much rather have an 8.5 under rather than an 8 over. And for the Pirates, willing to lay up to a minus 118 on the money line. And wrap things up with 975, 976 on the card. It is the Minnesota Twins playing against the LA Dodgers. James Paxton goes for the Dodgers and Bailey Obers on the bump for Minnesota. 8.5 is the total. Over and under, both between minus 105 to a minus 115. Between minus 138 to minus 150 is your number on Los Angeles. Between plus 124 and plus 135 is your number on Minnesota. It's willing to lay up to a minus 148 on the Dodgers money line. And if you're looking at the run line, getting that between plus 105 to plus 110, even knowing that the Dodgers in their 211 regular season wins last 2 seasons, they had just 32 laying on 1 run, I would rather stick with the money line here. I just feel like you should be getting better than a plus 110 on this run line, especially given that the Dodgers, they won 3 1-run games over the last 10 days. So have a little bit of trepidation there, and have some general trepidation with James Paxton. First start of the season, looks solid against the San Francisco Giants. He was able to go 5 scoreless innings, but did walk 5 and gave up 4 hits. When you give up 4 hits and 5 walks and 5 innings, and you give up 0 runs, that's a pretty charmed start. Meanwhile, for Bailey Ober, he just got tattooed in the second half of the season, well north of a 4 ERA, post all-star break, and he is very prone to giving up the deep ball. As a matter of fact, first start of the season against the Royals, gave up 3 home runs and got 4 outs, giving up 8 total runs. That's just not great, to say the least. Now, he's backed up by a bullpen that is relatively solid. I like Cody Funderburk or Ayokala, what these guys bring to the table, but Yoan Duran, he's one of the better closers out there in the big leagues. He's out of the fold, and for Minnesota, the bullpen, it is going to be very much rested. They had a game that got postponed a day ago, so that's going to help them out. But for the Los Angeles Dodgers, I do think that a lineup that was held to just 1 run yesterday against the Chicago Cubs going to bust out. Teoscar Hernandez, Mookie Betts, a combined 9 home runs in 12 games for these 2 gentlemen. Betts giving you north of 500 on base. Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, they both have provided north of a 420 on base. You've got Joe Ohtani, who was able to have a double and a triple yesterday. He's starting to find his footing after have to figure that everything that was happening off the field with him, it affected him for a few days, but it looks like he's been able to get past it. You do want to see a little bit more at the bottom of the fold. Kike Hernandez, James Altman, Gavin Lux, hanging below the Mendoza line of 200, but the Dodgers, one of the best teams at being able to draw walks in the big leagues. Meanwhile, it is a Minnesota Twins lineup that, without Royce Lewis, it has been rough. Guys not named Royce Lewis have 2 home runs in 228 at-bats. this season. You've got a lot of guys that have been frustrating, to say the least. Willy Castro, Edouard Julien, Max Kepler, Carlos Santana, Manuel Margot. These are all guys hitting a .185 or lower. Byron Buxton just has not provided any sort of boom whatsoever, only about a .310 on base as well. But in fact, Carlos Correa actually do a really nice job with north of a 500 on base of being able to show the old form of Carlos Correa as well. I do think that the Twins going to get a little bit more online against a guy in James Paxton that he just didn't look sharp in his first start, but Bailey Obert got massive question marks there, so I did set my total at 8.6. I think that the Dodgers do some damage with the bats, so looking at the over, and with the Dodgers going to be willing to take them on the money line, that'll wrap things up for the Monday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, the Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we have for those in. First one is my Twitter /XMLine, @GNN_D1. Keep in mind, Lurzy M, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. Another way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated, and then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Big thanks to Matt Josephs, aka Major Matt, for joining me in the last segment, coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season, and that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering 2 shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.